From Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse, this is Newsmakers. I'm Maureen McCollum. People do have the power to reduce the decline of the honeybees. That's according to the panel of area beekeepers we've been talking with on today's show. Marla Spivak is a University of Minnesota Department of Entomology professor. Wayne Lamar is vice president of the La Crosse Area Beekeepers Association. And Matt LaForge is vice president of the Wisconsin Honey Growers Association. La Crosse County UW Extension Director Mary Meehan Strub asks Matt LaForge how important farmers are to the future of bees.
Farmers really control a huge portion of land, and land that bees formerly depended on. Despite all the wonderful and very helpful initiatives that the government has started to plant pollinator-friendly things on public lands and even outside public office buildings, the amount of land dedicated to agriculture is very important to bees. So really getting some education and, as Marla said earlier, some possibly federal incentives for farmers to dedicate some hedgerows, dedicate even the marginal land to honeybee forage and native bee habitat is absolutely crucial.
What can the average person do? You know, the person who, you know, just lives in a house in town or house in the country, what can they do to make a difference?
They can do two things. They can plant flowers that bees like, and they can try to keep those flowers free of contamination from any kind of herbicide or insecticide or fungicide. So it's just putting out food for flowers. And as far as what flowers they should be, it's fairly easy if you go out at this time of year and you walk around in some public gardens where there's signage and some flowers you see bees all over, all kinds of bees, native bees, wild bees, honeybees, and other flowers you don't see any bees on them on a nice, warm, sunny day. And so those that are attractive to bees, you write down the name and you go buy those and plant those.
Things that bloom very early in the spring or very late in the fall are especially valuable. That's usually when the bees need it the most and when there's the least available. So people should look for year-round blooms, too. Those are very helpful for the honeybees.
That's a great point.
Is there something called a bee garden? We've had butterfly gardens. We've had rain gardens. Should we be planning for bee gardens?
Most definitely. And a lot of gardening groups throughout the United States are coming up with mixes right now. And so I think just keep your eye open. Nurseries, I think in the next few years, there's going to be a lot of places selling mixes and seed mixes and potted plants for your bee and pollinator garden. There's already a lot of places that sell seed mixes. And a lot of them include a lot of native flowering plants, which are somewhat helpful for our honeybees, but they also really help our native bees.
You mentioned earlier, Marla, the roadway kinds of concepts, whether it's the dividers on the interstate and that. Can they be designed so that they would be bee-friendly but yet not create traffic accidents?
Traffic accidents for the people or the bees? That's what I worry about, the bees.
Well, maybe both.
Yeah, I used to think that we flowering highways would be really good, but I do worry a little bit about all the salt we use and all the herbicide we use and all the pollution, heavy metals that come from our cars. Every time you apply the brakes, there's heavy metals that get into the roadsides. I think better places might be utility rights-of-way, a lot of our power lines and railroads that we're not using, yards, marginal land and farmland and those kind of areas, county roads that don't receive a lot of traffic and don't have so much salt on them. I think there's a lot of habitat, there's a lot of area where we could increase the number of flowering plants out there. Of course, our highways, our interstates, are really visible and would be beautiful with flowering plants, but we would have to change some of the way we maintain our roads.
And what about native prairie?
That's actually a big topic of research in my lab right now, because the question is, would native prairie flowers help honeybees? We know that they would really, really help all of our native bees and other pollinators. They really help our monarch butterflies, for example. But could honeybees create a honey crop from a native prairie? And so you'll have to stay tuned. We're have colonies out in some prairie sites that are really seeded heavily with flowers, and some of them are close to Wisconsin, really close by Afton. And we have these colonies out there, and we're looking at the dance language of the honeybees. So bees, when they find a good nectar source, they do this dance language communication. And we're observing the dances and kind of eavesdropping in on them to see if the bees are dancing to any of the flowers that are in the prairies. And we collect pollen from those bees, and so we can tell exactly what plant they've been on. So we're hoping that they are using the prairies, but I have a feeling that our honeybees prefer areas where there's big patches, dense stands of flowers, like when clover grows or alfalfa is grown and basswood trees that are really dense patches. That's what our honeybees really like.
You know, you talk about the honeybee dances, but then you also mention the flowering food that they use. In the area of research, is there anything going on that's looking towards finding a better bee food or a better source of bee food?
Well, the bees would tell us what the best bee food is through their dances, because mm-hmm. they only do a dance when the flowers they find are really high quality and what I would call profitable to them, so really high energy. So they would tell us. And we know what a lot of the really good bee flowers are. Clover, all kinds of clover are really good for honeybees. Alfalfa is very good for honeybees. There's a lot of vetches. There's in the native plants, Anna's hyssop is a really good flower for bees, but it's never planted in high enough density so that bees could really make a honey crop from it. If it was, it would be amazing.
There's a lot of private commercial research and interest going into making supplemental food for bees. Artificial protein is a big one. And that really does help colonies when the natural forage isn't available. It helps colonies when they're under stress because of diseases and that kind of thing. And there have been huge strides in that, and it's come a long, long way. And we really have some very good food for bees to help them when they really need it. But nothing will ever compare to the real thing.
Thinking of here in Wisconsin, actually here in La Crosse County as well, how many beekeepers are there in this area in Wisconsin, Wayne?
Our organization, the membership is about 50 plus members, and we're getting new members all the time. And Matt, I'm sure, could give you some idea of statewide in the WHPA membership.
For the Wisconsin honey producers, we do have a couple hundred members, 300-400. That's only a very small fraction of the number of beekeepers. Really, in the state of Wisconsin, after the past 5 or 6 years where there's been this huge surge in interest in small-scale backyard beekeeping, there are literally thousands of beekeepers in the state of Wisconsin. In every city, every town, I'm sure there's someone on your street who's a beekeeper and you probably don't even know it, but there's a lot of us out there.
So how does that compare then, Marla, with what's available in Minnesota?
Well, Minnesota has a lot of commercial beekeepers and a lot of backyard beekeepers. We don't have a state apiary program. In other words, we don't have a mandatory state registration program, so we really have no idea how many beekeepers there are. But I know the hobby group in the Twin Cities area has at least 400 members, and when I go to the monthly meetings, there's often 200 people there, and that's not just a fraction of all the beekeepers there are in the state.
So do we need more?
We need more commercial beekeepers.
Yeah.
We need those people that are willing to pollinate our fruit and vegetable crops and our any other thing that needs pollinating.
You're listening to Newsmakers on Wisconsin Public Radio, La Crosse. I'm Mary Meehan Strube, and today we're talking about the plight of the honeybee with our guest Marla Spivak a professor in the Department of Entomology at the University of Minnesota. Wayne Lamar, Vice President of the La Crosse Area Beekeepers Association, and Matt LaForge, Vice President of the Wisconsin Honey Producers Association. As you've worked with this over the last several years, do you find that the issue of honeybees is a politically charged issue?
Not so much politically charged. It's more heart charged. I think people are really feeling bad that the honeybees are in decline, and that's why there's such increased public awareness around it. I think honeybees are bipartisan. I really don't think that they're on any side of the political spectrum. Everybody likes them. We know that we need them.
And I understand that the White House has taken notice of the issue with honeybees. Is there enough concern about this issue in the U.S. and in the world?
It's certainly increasing. It's great that the White House has made it one of their campaigns to protect pollinators, and there's going to be a lot of planting of habitat on federal lands. What I would like to see a little bit more of is some incentives, some money appropriated behind it. There, of course, is some more for research, but what I would really like to see is money appropriated to farmers, for example, to be able to, instead of planting corn and soybeans from the roadside to the ditches, if they were given some incentives, financial incentives, to plant pollinator habitat as strips, for example, that would really be helpful. And I think all farmers would do that, but they would need to be compensated. I think it would be a really helpful thing for our environment. When we plant pollinator habitat, it's what I'll call stacked benefits or multiple benefits, because that kind of grass and especially flowering plants prevents soil erosion, and it keeps the nitrogen in the soil. It, of course, helps our bees and other pollinators, and it provides bird habitat, songbird habitat, wild game bird habitat. So there's a lot of benefits to putting in pollinator habitat in many locations.
Would you liken that to going back to the way it used to be, more natural?
I guess you could say that. The organic movement is a movement that is in that direction, and it definitely is favorable to the pollinators. And I'm sure that we will see some benefit from that.
We've talked about the decline and what's happening with honeybees, not only in Wisconsin, but across the U.S. And if we look at the business of raising honeybees, raising honey, how is that business being impacted by this decline in honeybees?
Well, for commercial beekeepers, it's really tough to make a living right now. So if bees were cattle and the rancher was losing a third of his livestock every year, like beekeepers lose a third of their bee colonies every year, it's very difficult to maintain your business financially. With bees, unlike cattle, you can colonies that survive, you can split them in two. This is a common beekeeping management technique, and you purchase or raise a new queen bee and you put it in part of the new split. So you can take an existing colony and make two out of it. And that's what beekeepers are doing to replace their losses. And it comes at a lot of labor expense and financial expense to make sure that they can keep their numbers up just for pollination and to sell other beekeepers bees. So all the new beekeepers that want bees, they're purchasing them from commercial beekeepers for the most part. And those are the same commercial beekeepers that are trying to keep their numbers in high enough so they can pollinate crops and provide bees. So it's very, very difficult right now.
Is it a costly venture to raise honeybees?
Well, the way it's been going lately, it's not very profitable because... Like Marla said, if you lose a third or even a half of your stock, it costs you to either purchase packages or nukes, or even if you split your old colonies, you reduce the strength of that colony, and that reduces your income because the bees produce less honey.
As I think back over the last couple of years and listening to media sources, I hear nationally in some cases that honey production's up. But here in Wisconsin, honey production's down. Or that the honey-producing colonies are up nationally and the trend is opposite here in the state. Is that accurate?
The honey production of Wisconsin, say, obviously the number of colonies that are here is important, but that generally there haven't been huge swings up or down from one year to the next. I mean, there's a definite trend, but not huge swings from year to year. The season does matter a lot for honey production, just like for any kind of agriculture. Different areas of the state, if they get more or less rain at the right or wrong time, and that can make a big difference. Wisconsin dropped out of the top 10 honey-producing states last year. That was, I mean, despite all the problems with the bees, that wasn't because of any like specific bee crisis last year. A lot of it was just because it wasn't a great year for honey. So that plays a part, too.
How much honey does an average colony produce?
The average the statewide average in Wisconsin in an average year is right about 60 pounds.
In Minnesota, it's about the same. And I'll tell you, 20 years ago when I first moved here, it was well over 100 pounds on average. And the difference is just lack of flowers.
In comparing our 60 pounds that are average here, how does that compare with what the average is nationally?
Well, it really varies state by state. So, you know, that in parts of North Dakota, they can get a 100-pound average, maybe higher. In parts of the southern states, they may make 30 or 50 pounds. So it really varies. I think as Matt was saying, Wisconsin was in the top 10 honey producers. Minnesota's usually in the top 5 or 6. North Dakota's usually number 1. South Dakota is usually 2 or 3. So the upper Midwest is the best honey-producing region of the United States. California and Florida also produce a lot of honey, but they have a lot of beekeepers. But the per colony yield is highest in the upper Midwest.
Thinking globally, what will the world be like if we keep losing honeybees at this rate?
Well, we have seen in the Far East, in Japan, for example, I don't really know the history of why, but we see pictures of people climbing into cherry trees and pollinating them with a small brush or a feather because they do not have pollinators to do that.
I've seen the same from China with pear trees and apple trees. And some of that's when they plant a variety that's not attractive to bees and they have people go out and hand pollinate them. But I don't think we want to be up in all of our trees moving pollen manually. I think that would not be a good state of affairs, especially when the bees are so good at doing it themselves.
What's the best case scenario for the future with honeybees?
Well, if we could restore some of the original vegetation and forested areas to produce pollen for our pollinators, and if we could reduce the type of insecticides that are being used, if we could back off on that, would certainly help.
I agree. If we could restore a lot of the flowering plants and be really careful with our herbicide use and also our insecticide use and even our fungicide use. There's just a lot of toxins out there for the bees. And so just like people want good, clean food, and we're really paying attention to our human nutrition, bees really want and need the same thing. They really need a lot of good, clean food. And if we can help provide that for them, they in turn provide us with good, clean food through their pollination services.
Marla Spivak is a professor in the Department of Entomology at the University of Minnesota. Wayne Lamar is vice president of the La Crosse Area Beekeepers Association. And Matt LaForge is vice president of the Wisconsin Honey Growers Association. They spoke with La Crosse County UW Extension Director Mary Mian Strube about why honeybee populations are declining. Thanks for listening to Newsmakers from Wisconsin Public Radio in La Crosse. I'm Maureen McCullum. Our production team includes Thomas Rehfeld, Mary Mian Strube, and our senior news editor and producer, John Davis. If you missed part of today's show, you can find the audio archives at wpr.org/newsmakers. Our site also has other recent editions of Newsmakers, and if you'd like to share comments or make a suggestion for a future show, you'll also find links to our producers and staff. That and more at wpr.org/newsmakers. For updates on future shows, photos, and more, like us on Facebook at WPR Newsmakers.